Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the artisan food retailers of Kilkenny.
Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Mags Morrissey.
Hello and you're very welcome to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I am Frances Nesbitt from Crowine Cottages here in Kilkenny and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey from Hedgehog Bakery in Thomastown. We're live today, Friday from 4 to 5 and this show will be repeated on Monday from 4 to 5 and while we're on air, we'd love to hear from you so please feel free to get in touch with the show. The easiest way is by text. Drop us a text to 086-353-7782 or you can email us at any stage during the week. kitchengarden@crkc.ie. Now, on the show today, we'll have the usual food news and Mags's Food Week. And then a little later on in Nature Notes, we'll be looking at frogs. It's the time of the year where they start to do their thing and frog spawn starts to appear in the pond. And then we've plenty of jobs to be getting on with in the garden so that we can make the most of this gorgeous early spring weather. Mags, how are you?
I'm very good.
How was your week?
I had a great week, actually. Probably my food highlight of the week actually was I had two small boys off school and their three cousins were over and it was a wet day, so I decided to get them to produce lunch. So there was five of them clattering around and chattering around in the kitchen for probably a good hour and a half, and then they called me to the dining room for lunch, which was well, they were very excited doing it, and they had set the table very nicely, candles lighting and the whole lot, and dessert, well, we had crackers, cheese, tomatoes and cucumber for starter, and then there was pasta which they'd cooked themselves with some tomato sauce and cheese for main course, and then the starter, the dessert, which was the most amusing of all. I was wondering what they were going to produce for dessert, because I knew there was very little in the kitchen on that sort of line, so they produced a large plate of digestive biscuits and two big bowls of popcorn. Which,
wow,
I think is what children obviously think dessert is about, something that's kind of treatish. So I'd find it a little bit difficult to eat popcorn for my dessert.
Yeah.
But they did have two types.
Two types of popcorn.
Two types of popcorn.
So basically they just raided the press for anything that was kind of treatish.
Well, they had to make it. Well, they had to put it, yeah. So,
So they popped the corn, or did they put
the
a bag?
Okay, they popped the popcorn in the microwave.
Ah, right, okay.
But still,
okay.
It wasn't just opening a bag.
Right. So
they had buttered popcorn, and then they had a sugared popcorn. Which was, they ate both bowls. So, they got a great kick out of it, actually. And it was nice to see them doing it. And it was very nice to sit down and have lunch served up to you on a rainy day. So it was entertaining. Anyway.
And they're on midterm.
Yeah, they're on midterm. So are yours, I'm sure. The whole country is off this week. So,
only 2 days out in Dunamagan. That's all. Only Thursday and Friday. It's not a week.
Yeah, I thought I had a week. All schools do it differently, actually. So, so we did a few other interesting things during the week and stuff, which was nice. I've been on the lookout for lesser celandine, you know, the little yellow flower.
Oh, yeah, they're in flower now out at my place. They've started.
Yeah.
Gorgeous, beautiful flower.
They're always later up and at a height, so I don't have any in my house yet. But I was sitting in traffic in Kilkenny the other day and I spotted them. You know, the row of trees on the parade just outside the castle?
Yeah.
Well, if you look up the one closest to the castle, halfway up just where the bough breaks in two, you'll see a little plant of celandine just sitting there. I couldn't take a picture of it because it's too far away from me, but it looks so... Most people wouldn't even see it. It's just that I happened to be sitting in traffic right there and I spotted it. It's quite... Well, amazing that that's where they're growing.
They're obviously a beautiful little flower. Beautiful little flower.
Yeah, they are beautiful.
Bright and sunny. And like if the sun comes through the cloud at all, the yellow just absolutely bounces off them.
In another few weeks, there'll be more of them. It's a little bit early for them, actually.
Your children making up the recipe, though, or the menu for your lunch, reminded me, myself and the 10-year-old girl watched MasterChef The Professionals last night. I have to admit I have never watched an episode of MasterChef ever, and last night I watched the one where professional chefs, like head chefs from catering companies, restaurants or whatever, come in. Six of them come in, and the first part of the show is one of the judges, who's a chef, gives them a task to do. One of the tasks was make a carbonara. And they've no advance notice of this. All the ingredients that they might need and a few additional ones are there in front of them. I think they've 10 or 15 minutes to make the carbonara. And two out of the three that did that challenge lashed in loads of cream. And as these poor characters are trying to cook, the two judges who are chefs and the other guy who's the presenter is literally standing at the edge of the cooker, staring at them, putting kind of all sorts of unusual faces on and grimacing and making comments. It must be the hardest thing for that chef ever to do.
Yeah, that's kind of cruel. I don't know why you'd put yourself forward for that, though, in fairness.
Really?
I didn't watch my children in the kitchen. I couldn't
leave
do it anyway
it.
Because it would have probably upset me a little bit. But yeah, leave them at it.
It was the toughest thing I've watched on telly.
And very unnerving. Like, how,
very,
you know, you're
unnerving.
Definitely going to make a mistake.
Oh.
You are at that
and
stage.
Then the show just continues in that vein where, you know, make us something else now, and then they get it wrong. They don't know what it is. The chef has to explain it to them, makes them feel like an idiot. One poor character, just as he was running out of time, your man said, right, that's it, time up. He'd forgotten to bring the sauce over from the cooker behind him.
Oh, Lord.
So, no, they wouldn't let him put it on. Served up his plate, and all the comments were like, it's very dry.
Just
could
pasta.
Do with a sauce.
It's one thing, you have some defence
oh,
if you're not
Lord.
A professional, but being a professional doing that,
terrible.
Oh Lord, I don't know.
Terrible. So yeah, there's lots of colour out and about in the garden at the minute. I know there's a few jobs to do later, but one of the most important ones at this time of the year is go out and have a look at your lesser celandines and some of the other little flowers that are out at the moment. Last of the snowdrops, do you have any
yeah,
of those?
Yeah, I have a couple of nice snowdrops. I have a nice selection of snowdrops, crocuses and the daffodils literally just since yesterday. They're always slower up with me, but they're now out and they're beautiful. They actually are a fabulous colour because we missed them last year really because of the snow. The snow kind of, the daffodils came out, then the snow arrived and they were flattened. Yeah, they were. So they're a brilliant colour today, and particularly in the sun today, they are actually fabulous. So it's nice to see them. And the ones that I planted out on the roadside are just breaking out.
Oh, good.
And they always just make me feel, well, they'd make you feel happy, really. So yeah, it's lovely to see them. And it does, today feels like spring. It's a nice day, actually.
It is a lovely day.
A little bit wet during the week, so I can't confess to getting an awful lot of gardening done.
But there's some nice weather on the way this weekend. It's supposed to be nice.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So it's going to be nice and mild. 13.5 degrees today on the way in.
Yeah, like, was
that's,
it?
Yeah, that's
well, there
great
you go.
Temperature for this stage in February.
I saw bats out last night, actually, and the evening before, I think, which is a little bit early. Now, they do come out if the weather's nice, I suppose, but yeah, it's only February, so it's nice to see them.
Plenty of midges about, so I can see why they'd come out for them.
Yes, on
my walk, I'm passing through clouds of midges doing their thing, getting ready for spring as well, so I'm sure they know that they're out and about and ready for eating.
Perhaps. They're getting hungry after the winter. They haven't had a very long winter, though, really.
No, and it hasn't been very tough on them either, temperature-wise. So you've an array of food in here for me. Are we going to talk about this now?
Yeah, we can do. What would you like to start with?
Have you got here?
We've got microgreens. We've got this really interesting thing called peanut rayu, I think it's how it's pronounced. And then we've got a King of Kefir drink. It's a water kefir, so a fermented drink. I've brought a bottle opener and everything.
Water-based. Triple filtered water, apple juice, consumed by the kefir to create the fizz, ginger juice, lemon zest, lemongrass, turmeric, spices, cardamom, fennel, star anise and cloves, sea salt, a sweetener, and water kefir. And this is all a fizzy drink, obviously.
I'll open it.
Produced
and you can
by
try
King
it.
Of Kefir.
It's
very, very interesting.
Tasty, actually. Quite refreshing.
Now, I keep or breed or produce, or I don't know what the correct term would be, milk based kefir. So I have the grains that live in milk, and every day or every 2 days I take off the fermented product from that. And the kefir grains, the bacteria in there have been working away on the lactose. They feed on the lactose in the milk. And you ingest the bacteria as well as the milk. It's supposed to be great for the gut. I really enjoy it.
Well, I've been drinking yours for the last couple of weeks, but try that.
Oh, do you know what this reminds me of? Smell and taste. I used to make nettle beer.
Oh, okay.
And that's exactly the taste.
Isn't it really nice?
It is nice, yeah.
Very
it is.
Refreshing.
It is very refreshing.
Nice. You can get it in the wine centre, I think, and a couple of the gourmet shops. And I know some of the super values have it. I'm not sure about the ones at Kilkenny, but some super values have it. But it's nice, kind of refreshing. If you didn't want to have alcohol or something and you wanted to have something that's kind of a bit special or a little bit and really tasty.
Mm.
There's a couple of different flavours, obviously. And it's made in Dublin, actually. So yeah, you can have. I'll give you another drop. You can.
And is it good for the gut?
Now, it's very good for the gut.
It's bacteria,
it's fermented and stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's good stuff.
And the effervescence, is there tiny amount of alcohol in there? Does
no.
it say on the bottle?
No, there's none. No, it's absolutely non-alcohol. Non-alcoholic, and there's no added sugar. So it's the fizz is from the ferment that it produces its own fizz.
Mm. I'd say there'd have to be a small, tiny amount of alcohol in there, maybe. But anyway,
no,
it's below the. It can count as a zero alcohol drink, I think, by law, if it has less than 0.1% or something in it. So,
okay.
But very, very tasty and very refreshing. Is it expensive?
You know what? I don't know how much it is. I'm sorry.
Mm.
Isn't that bad? I didn't check the price. I had this one in the fridge and stuff, and I didn't check the price today, so sorry about that.
It's very tasty.
Yeah.
And it's produced by King of Kefir,
Monaghan chap called. Mm.
Now, actually, that would make a perfect accompaniment for something that I brought in, which during the week I saw that one of the German retailers had duck breasts by an Irish company in the freezer, and very special offer, very good value. So I picked up a few packs of duck breast. And delicious, just grilled and so on. Like, I love duck, and if you do it nicely under the grill, you get nice crispy skin. Some of the varieties that were available, they're produced by Silver Hill Duck, and some of the varieties that were available were already kind of in the packet, marinated with salt and pepper and so on.
I like confit, I have to say.
Confit is fabulous. Mm. Yeah, also produced by Silver Hill Duck and available in the German retailers. But what I like to do with duck breast, is to cure it, because the finest piece of charcuterie I've ever tasted in my life was a smoked goose breast.
Mm.
You don't often get goose breast now, even in the German retailers you don't. But duck breast isn't too far off it, because you've got a very dense meat and then a nice fat layer and some skin. So what I do is I take my duck breasts and I put them in a dry cure of salt and sugar and juniper berries and bay leaves and pepper.
Okay, peppercorns.
Nope. Crushed pepper.
Okay.
And I'd leave them in that cure for, depending on the size of the breast, and these were quite large. These, like, duck breast is a sizable
big
thing.
Big duck.
Yeah. So they were, I kept them in that for 2 days. And then I took them out and washed them off in cold water, get all of the salt off it, or as much of the salt off as you can. And I dried it for another 2 days. And that drying process, because the salt at that stage now has kind of gone into the meat, as they're sitting in the salt for 2 days, a lot of liquid comes out that you can just pour off. It's no good for anything. So the meat is now denser, it's drier. And 2 days drying in the fridge makes it even tighter, even denser. Then I wrap it up into a sausage using butcher skin. And I put it over...
Sorry, what's butcher skin?
Butcher's
sorry.
String, sorry.
Oh, sorry, sorry.
And I put it in the smoker, over cold smoke, for 4, 5, 6 hours, depending on how smoky the smoker gets.
Okay.
So it's not like a fire that's underneath it. It never gets over the kind of ambient temperature. So I was doing it outside at night, so it was like below 10, which is perfect. You want to kind of keep it at fridge temperature if you can, but below 10 is fine. And it was over that smoke for about 5 or 6 hours, I'd say. So that gives you the flavour of the smoke on it. And then you hot smoke it or cook it in some other way until the inside gets to 65 degrees. So you've cooked the meat now.
Okay. So can you just cold smoke it?
If you just cold smoke it, what you then need to do is dry the meat completely. So just like you'd produce a Parma ham. So a Parma ham is cured and then smoked and then left to dry. So all of the moisture leaves it so that it can't create any of the nasty bacteria which will make you sick.
Yeah, okay.
Right? So you wouldn't eat this unless you'd air dried it after you smoked it. And if you were going to air dry it, you'd probably leave it in the salt a little bit longer just to make sure that none of the nasty bacteria grows.
Okay.
But I don't want this to taste too salty. It's a cured meat, so it's always going to taste salty.
Well, salt is good. Yeah.
So, but I don't want it to taste kind of too salty. So because I'm going to cook it, I don't need to air dry it for as long. So I'm going to give you some of this and you can still see that it's quite soft and it's quite moist. And I made 3 variations on it. So I messed around with the cure and I messed around with what I put on the duck as it was in the coal smoker. So, on your left-hand side, so this one here on your left-hand side is just cured as I described and smoked. So that's just plain cured smoked duck breast. Do you want to try that there? Mm. So you can see it retains... the meat gets quite dense. It's sliced kind of thin. Mm. But the fat and the skin aren't kind of crispy or anything like that. But that's a lovely piece of charcuterie, isn't it?
It is.
I love that.
It's lovely.
I absolutely love that.
Yeah.
Now, that was the first one. Don't eat it all because we have to get through this really quickly. Now you can bring the rest of it home with you. Pack your lunch.
Okay.
This next one is cured in exactly the same way, but as it's gone into the hot smoker, I've given it just another little sprinkling of demerara sugar on the outside.
Okay.
So try this one now.
So should it be kind of sweet?
Mm, exactly that. So whatever you put on it at that final stage, of course, influences the flavour of what it is that you're tasting. So a very, very different thing. The same curing
very
process,
yeah,
but the little sprinkling of the sugar on the outside makes it very, very different. Now, this final one, I also put a little bit of sugar on, but then I gave it a spritz of apple cider vinegar. And I think the sharpness...
Did you smoke? That was before you smoked it?
Just before I smoked. As it was hot smoking, actually, I gave it a spritz of the apple cider vinegar. And I think that's absolutely lovely. So, very easy to do. You don't need any real specialised equipment. It's very easy to create a kind of a smoker if you wanted to just hot smoke this straight away without the cold smoking step. But well worth trying. It's basically duck bacon. So you're curing it in a little salt and sugar and pepper. And then after a day and a half or 2 days in that, you can cold smoke it if you have one, or just hot smoke it in one of those hot smokers that, you know, you see fish being done in, or you can create a little smoker yourself in a wok with some wood chips on the bottom and then some tin foil, and then put on whatever you're smoking and then cover the whole thing again in tin foil so that the smoke is kind of trapped in there as it cooks. And once you bring whatever you're smoking up to 65 degrees, the bacteria is dead, it's cooked, away you go.
Very good. It's very
well worth doing.
Rich.
It is very rich.
Yeah.
Now, you wouldn't be eating a whole pile of that.
No, you wouldn't.
But
you wouldn't.
I love it. And now that we have a drink here, I can enjoy the drink with it too.
I should have brought two glasses. Oh.
Now, listen, we better take an ad break and we'll come back to some of the rest of these treats that you've brought in just after the ads. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Text us on 086 353 7782.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're very welcome back to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I'm Francis Nesbitt and I'm joined by Mags Morrissey, and we're live today, Friday, from 4 to 5. Now, you can send us in some texts. I'm having some problem with the text machine, though. But if you have any questions or comments, please do send us in a text, 086 353 7782. I think somebody was asking me about the recipe for the cure there before the machine went a bit wonky ways. So I'll have a look at that once I can get it working again. Or you can email us at any stage during the week, kitchengarden@crkc.ie. Now, there's loads of food with us here today. You have some of the Highbank Orchard Treacle.
Yeah, this is new. I hadn't heard of this, actually. So it's treacle like you'd buy in a tin in the supermarket.
Uh-huh.
Use it in baking, and some breads have it in that. But this is really lovely treacle, obviously, and made in Kilkenny.
And did you know that it's actually... I love the lads out in Highbank.
It's really nice. Like, you wouldn't actually taste treacle from a tin. It's quite heavy and...
Oh, God, that's really, really tasty.
It's really nice, though, isn't it? Like, you can really put it on a pancake.
That. Oh, my God. Yeah, well, they do make a really nice syrup out there.
Yeah, the apple syrup is fab, but they've had that a long time. But this is new. I had never heard of this until today, actually.
Much darker, richer flavour. Did you know it's Julie's birthday today?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Julie Calderpot's birthday out in Highbank. It's her birthday today. Happy birthday,
Julie. Happy birthday, Julie. Your treacle is fabulous.
Your treacle is
And I know there's a recipe for making sticky toffee pudding, which is not the recipe I use, actually, but there is another one that has treacle in it. And apparently made with that treacle, it's absolutely fabulous.
I'm going to use some of this the next time I hot smoke some duck breast. That would be delicious.
It would, actually, wouldn't it?
That would be delicious on it.
Yeah. Or kind of, you could dip something in it.
Hot smoked duck breast.
Maybe. But it's really nice, isn't it?
I just keep turning this over on my finger and then licking my finger. Half the bottle is gone.
I don't actually know what's in treacle, but
No. Bittersweet flavour for meat glazes, marinades and bakes. And the ingredients are Irish organic apples. That's it. Store at ambient temperature. Wow.
Wow. So, yeah. Full of good stuff.
Flavours, preservatives and gluten-free. My God. Fair play to the lads. They're just so innovative out there, aren't they?
This is just
Rod
brilliant.
Rod and Julie, they're just coming up with new stuff all the time, but that is delicious.
It's not the cheapest stuff you'll ever buy.
No.
But it's fabulous. And you're not going to waste a drop of it.
No, you'd use that
from down
for
the road and it's organic. Like, that's really good stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there we
go. And they have a shop out at iBank as well. I wonder would the prices be different if you went out to visit them directly on the farm. I don't know. But check out the website because I know iBank, they're online on social media and they have a website themselves.
So it comes in two different sizes, that size bottle and then there's a larger bottle as well if you're looking for.
So this is $3.90 for this bottle here, which is just 50 mil. Yeah, quite expensive but compared to the other treacle, but really it's a premium product.
It's
and
premium.
It's organic and it's produced locally and
it's worth it,
fabulous.
Actually, isn't it?
That is just delicious. I'm going to get one of those.
Okay.
Now we're going a little further afield with this crack. Peanut Ryu.
You're going to love this.
From the White Mouse Company. Lovely. I love my food companies to be named after rodents. Excellent. Peanut Ryu. Let me just have a quick read of this now. So it's packed full of peanuts, sesame and chili. This devastatingly delicious condiment fuses Japanese, Chinese and Korean flavors with echoes of umami. Give your vegetables a kick. Jazz up your stir fry. That's what it says on the tin. It's dribbling all over me here.
Yeah, it is a little bit
messy. I hope Mick doesn't
messy.
See. Don't get any on the desk. If we suddenly go off air, you know what's happened.
I got a present of this, actually, and the friend who gave it to me was raving about it. She was telling me, I couldn't understand peanuts in oil with all of these things and stuff, what it would taste like. But then I had it, and it is the most delicious thing.
Now, what would you use this with?
You could just kind of use it as a dip, maybe, or put it on a little bit of toasted sourdough. Would be fab. On a charcuterie plate, you could have it as, you know, part of it. Just take a little bit, see what you think.
Okay, so I have nothing to dip in it now. I'm just going to...
No, you're just tasting it. But
okay, stir it around. So what I'm looking at here looks like a chili oil. So it's a very light oil, not very viscous. It's kind of coloured red as if it had a whole pile of chilies in it. Inside, there's lots of sesame seeds, broken bits of peanut, some other kind of nut which doesn't look like a peanut. Fabulous Asian-y smell. It's the only way you
Go
can
on,
describe
try
it. And what, do I take a spoonful of this now?
Yeah, I do. You'll love it.
Really? Okay. Oh, that is very tasty.
Isn't it?
It is very tasty. Mmm. Oh, I don't know what the hell you'd use that for. Oh, there's quite a chili kick
there's
off
a good,
it too.
Yeah, kick.
Wow.
Now, the bad news is you can't buy it in Kilkenny at the moment, but they are trying to sell it
hot.
Down here.
Mm.
But isn't it really tasty and unusual and...
full of those umami flavours.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to make sometime,
have a little bit
of it, if I master it, I haven't succeeded in making it yet. My God, you're eating it by the huge spoonful.
It's a tiny spoonful.
It's so hot. I want to make an umami kind of mix, like a seasoning that's just full of those, you know, that, so umami, the fifth sense, that kind of unctuous, fill your mouth kind of flavour. Seaweed is fantastic for giving you that.
Mm.
So I want to make some kind of seaweed-based umami seasoning. So when you're making a stew or anything like that, if it's just missing something, it's not
just
quite flavoursome, put in a sprinkle of that.
Mm.
So if I master it, I haven't quite got it right yet, but if I master it, I'll bring in a recipe.
I often go for a sprinkle or a dash of good cider vinegar if I'm looking for a little bit of an extra kick.
Oh.
And the last thing we have today is everyone's talking about.
Well, that was very unusual. Now I'm
it
not
is
sure.
Unusual.
I'm not sure what we'd whether we'd make that a regular. I'm not sure how you'd regularly use that one. And if it was dribbling all over the desk,
yeah, it's like quite messy, right?
Very messy.
Yeah, you wouldn't be eating it every evening or anything like that. But I think, like, as on if you have a charcuterie plate and stuff as part of it with some nice
strong
toasted sourdough and stuff.
Now. Strong flavours.
Strong
there.
Flavours. Yeah, you can feel it at the back of your throat.
Yeah,
and that.
Really.
This is microgreens. You know, everyone's growing microgreens and that. And I have to confess, I don't really often buy them, but I did buy them for this purpose. So these ones are from County Leash. Initially a little bag of stuff that you can eat them if you want to just pick at something. So there's pea shoots, sunflowers, lentils, radish, fennel, chocolate mint, peppermint, sorrel, spring onion, and dianthus. I'm not sure. So you can have a little pick at that. And really nice as a kind of a garnish, or throw them into a salad or something, or into a sandwich.
Chefs love these.
Yeah.
The chefs love these because they're very, very pretty to use as a garnish on a plate. And each one of those little seedlings, particularly one of these ones here, now that looks like a brassica to me. And it hasn't produced any of its proper leaves yet. So all you can tell is that it's a brassica. So they're the little seed leaves. But if you pop that into your mouth, you might as well be eating broccoli. Isn't it
just
incredible?
When you bite a few bits, it's like really fragrant, really tasty.
It's the taste of the parent plant in two tiny, tiny, tiny little leaves.
Well, it looks really attractive, actually, doesn't it?
Looks lovely on a nicely cooked piece of meat, or if you want to throw them into a salad or whatever. They're really, really colourful. You can see the beet leaves in there. I love beetroot leaves when they've got that rich red veining on the green. Looks absolutely lovely. Great colour in there too.
A nice little addition in a kind of if you had a plain cheese sandwich or something like that. Nice little addition.
Now, the thing about if they don't get the balance right, that's really, really tasty. But an awful lot of seedling leaves taste very peppery. So if you were to mash too much of that into a sandwich now, you'd also get a belt of heat off you.
They seem to have gotten that combination particularly nice.
Very nice, very nice.
Really nice stuff, actually.
The peppery stuff you see is a protection device that the plant develops in itself to stop creatures eating it.
Like Mizuna or one of those.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
Rocket
Rocket is the perfect example.
Yeah.
And why I mentioned it was because Rocket grows abundantly and very quickly. And often the producers... It's nice and easy. You just get lots and lots of Rocket. And if it's too much of it is in the bag, it gets a bit kind of peppery.
I really like that combination, though.
It's just a nice combination of
really nice bits and pieces.
And this is available from the girls in the Little Green Grocer here in Kilkenny.
Yeah.
Lovely. Microgreens. Absolutely gorgeous. And that's from Durrow, just across the border in County Leash.
And I'm sure there's somebody growing, maybe some of the gardeners are growing it in Kilkenny as well. I'm not sure, but if they are, they can give us a shout and we'll taste it the next time. So there were my little foodie.
Well, there was plenty there to kind of explore.
Wasn't there?
Mm.
Do you think it was the nicest or the most interesting?
Well, I have to tell you that the Highbank Orchard treacle was the find of today for me in the things that you brought in. The water kefir is nice. I'm not sure about the peanut chili umami thing. I don't know what I'd use that for. I use microgreens. I harvest them up in the greenhouse myself when I'm growing stuff up there because they look lovely and the presentation of them is really, really nice. And anybody who does any kind of growing, or if you have a windowsill, you can just get a little seed tray, sprinkle it with mixed salad leaves, and in 3 or 4 days, they're ready to use.
You'd be harvesting very quickly, yeah.
The thing is, don't pull. So the mistake I made when I first started using microgreens is that you're tempted to kind of pull them as you need them, but you just end up, of course, they've no roots. Mm. So you just end up pulling them up out of the soil and you get soil and everything. So you harvest with the scissors. They're lovely. But this treacle.
That's super.
I'm so glad you brought that in for me. That's lovely. I'm going to enjoy using that. What's that face for now? Was that not a gift? Now, the one thing I noticed in the news this week, we were talking last week about the collapse in the biodiversity and drop in insect numbers and so on. Maybe all of that came into the news because there was the National Biodiversity Conference was on yesterday.
It was on for 2 days.
Yeah, 2 days. So maybe those headlines came out just in advance of that on purpose, or maybe it was a coincidence. I don't know. But the minister attended, Josefa Madigan attended the conference. And I have to say, reading the reports from it, you'd think that everybody was totally on top of this, top of their brief. They realised how urgent and how critical it was that we kind of protect the insects and the pollinators and so on. And as part of the minister's statement, she said, "It's time to roll up our sleeves to support biodiversity conservation, enhancement and restoration in Ireland. And I'm delighted to work with my colleagues across government and partners in private and non-governmental sectors to commit to the new horizon for nature." This is the same lady who brought in extended hedgerow cutting periods.
I was following it on social media quite a lot, actually, and yeah, she didn't go down particularly well. She did suggest that we should all put up bird boxes and that might be a bit of a solution. So I don't think she quite gets it.
So I don't know what the total budget for government is in any one year, but it's in the billions. And we're looking at spending over $1 billion, maybe $2 billion on a children's hospital. Absolutely urgent. And it seems to be that, well, what it costs, it costs. And if we need to spend it, we need to spend it. And it's needed, so crack on with it. And yet, as part of her massive announcement yesterday, she wanted everybody to applaud the fact that funding for biodiversity actions by local authorities, biodiversity and heritage officers all over the country, 26 counties, the whole country, the funding for that has been doubled now to 1 million euro.
It seems ridiculous. Apparently the Irish Greyhound Association or whatever was getting the same amount as the National Parks and Wildlife Services. Like, it just doesn't make sense. And it shows completely a lack of commitment. Michael D. Higgins seemed to have been the only one who made an amazing speech yesterday, who actually seems to understand the urgency. And but then again, he's the president, not actually in government. But yeah, there was a lot of the kind of conservation groups and stuff were very disappointed with her statements, and it's they just don't seem to get it, that how important it is for every aspect of our well-being, economic, everything. It is a bit scary, actually. Although, you know, and there are plans and stuff, but a lot of the stuff has not been implemented. So even if there's not will or there's not money to implement, I'm not sure. But and there's loads of good people speaking, like Liam Lycett and stuff, who made some really valid points. And then she came along and said kind of rubbishy stuff, really.
You see, I think it's easy for some people, maybe in politics, to listen to vested interests and interest groups and even state agencies, but that work in nature. So Liam Lycett, from the Biodiversity Forum down in Waterford. So a man who knows his area, but at the same time, it's kind of like, oh, sure, he works in that, wouldn't you know? He'd say that. But the president came out and said that if we were in the mine now with our little canary in the cage to tell us that there's a warning, we should really be paying attention to something here, he made a comment that we're up to our knees in dead canaries now, and we're still ignoring the canaries dropping out of the cage. To me, it's just it beggars belief that it's treated so kind of nonchalantly.
It is, yeah. I don't know what's going to happen after the conference. I know there was there's an awful lot of a lot of positive stuff came from it, but everybody, you know, from the bottom up and the top down and stuff, but it has to be part of government policy, and they have to put their money behind it, and then they have to implement it. So they have to give powers to Parks and Wildlife, not just kind of rubber stamping jobs.
Well, there's a new charter, apparently. The minister announced this new charter now, which is aimed at supporting the implementation of the National Biodiversity Action Plan. So we already have a plan. We have a report. Now we have a charter on the report from the plan. The charter was agreed upon at a meeting that was chaired by Josefa Madigan, Minister for Culture, Heritage and the Gaeltacht. That was attended by other ministers as well as representatives from 14 other organisations, some of whom, I'd imagine, know how urgent this is and want to kind of get on with it. And I wonder if anything from the Seeds for Nature Charter will actually come into effect.
We'll see.
We'll see, indeed. But I thought that was timely, given the discussion we had last week about insects and their decline.
Yeah, sorry, Jane Stout, who spoke on the radio phone last week, she presented at it as well.
Right. Well, we'll take our second ad break, and coming up after that, then we'll maybe move to the garden. We'll see how our gardens are getting on, and we'll talk about a few jobs to do as well. And you also want to talk to us about frogs.
Frogs, yep.
Great. Okay, we'll be back just after this.
You can email the show, kitchengarden@ckc.ie. Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're welcome back to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I am Francis Nesbitt, and I'm here with Mags Morrissey, and we're live today up until 5 o'clock, and the show is repeated on Mondays from 4 to 5. While we're here, you can send us in any questions or comments that you might have by text to 086-353-7782, or you can email at any stage during the week, kitchengarden@ckc.ie. And a couple of questions in about the name of the umami kind of peanutty thing. We might put all of that up when I tweet about the podcast of the show.
Well, it's peanut
Oryu. Okay.
There's a little thingy over the A, so
I'll get you to send me the names of all of those, and we'll put it up with the podcast of the show, which is available on thekitchengarden.ie every week. Now, you went for a walk looking for frogs.
I did. I decided I'd go looking for frogs, somebody told me either north or south of Great Namana along the Barrow Good Spot. So I kind of just expected to turn up and they'd be there, really. But it wasn't quite so easy. So I had a walk anyway, but I didn't see any frogs. A little bit early for frog spawn, maybe, but they should be gathering in that. So I was hoping to hear some of the males calling in that. Now, they do tend to make more noise at night, but even still. But I didn't see any frogs at all, actually. Mm. But it is the time for them. And we only have one species in Ireland. Did you know that?
I didn't.
Yeah, but they can often look quite different.
Yeah.
They have different colours.
Green or brown or dark green. Or
yeah, kind of olivey colours, brown and variety. They generally have kind of bands on their legs, kind of dark bands on their legs and just in front of their eyes, which is kind of standard. But then other than that, they're different colours and they can change colour based on their surroundings and stuff. So if they're trying to blend in and not be eaten by a heron or something, they can change their colours. So they're protected by the Wildlife Act here and they're listed as an internationally important species. So they're called Rana temporaria.
Oh.
There you go. We also have a toad, natterjack toad, which...
But they're in confined areas now, aren't
Kerry.
They? Yeah,
it's they're in Kerry. I've never seen one in Kerry, actually, but and they're much bigger, much drier looking than a frog. They don't have that kind of wet look. But they... There was a project years ago where they were worried about just having them just confined to one small area of the country, that if something happened, the population there, then they would be wiped out. So they moved a few of them to the Raven in Wexford to let them breed there, just to have a second population. And I did see one there once, actually. So they're much bigger than a frog, kind of dry looking. It was under a stone and kind of lumpy bumps on their backs and that, and a slightly palish colour. But
they make noise now, don't they?
They do, yeah. But the regular frogs make noise too. I haven't often heard a frog make noise, I have to say.
I have a quarter acre pond out at Crowan and it's full of frogs at the appropriate time of the year, full of frog spawn in the next couple of weeks. I've never heard a frog make any noise out there. No. Lots and lots. I find them in the grass all the time because most people think of frogs in water. And when kids keep frogs, they don't do it anymore. But when I was a child, kids used to trap frogs. And my next door neighbour used to keep them in a pond. And all year round, the poor frogs were just left in the pond. Mm. They spend most of the year in the grass.
No, they're amphibians. So yeah, they can live in water or on land.
They love long grass and going after the insects out there.
And they're adapted for both lives and stuff. When they're underwater, they're breathing through their skin. Mm. So the skin on their body is quite loose and stuff. And they breathe under their skin. But and they've got, you know, their eyes, big bulbous kind of eyes and stuff. That's where they can watch, look out for food and keep an eye on predators. So... like herons would take them, like they'd love them and stuff. I remember when we had, in Dublin actually, there was frogs in the garden and we got a couple of hens. And I remember one day just turning, looking out the window and stuff, and there was a hen with a frog and it literally kept at it until it killed it.
Yeah.
It was quite a spectacle with small children looking out going, oh my goodness.
Save the frog, mammy, save the frog.
I've
seen a peacock take one. No pecking or any of that nonsense required.
Just
straight up and gone. Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Hedgehogs will also. But I suppose that makes kind of sense, doesn't it?
And killer hedgehogs.
What, killer hedgehogs? Rats, apparently.
Would take a frog.
Yeah.
Mm, doesn't surprise me. The enemy that is, or the enemy of all that is good and wholesome on your holding, as John Seymour said about the rat. I saw one dead on the road today outside as I was going for a walk with the boy. A massive thing. He thought it was a rabbit at first. He called me over and he was like, what's this, Daddy? And it was just an enormous rat. Oh. Nasty creatures.
And their eyes are very sensitive to movement. As you know, any time you've ever tried to catch a frog, you know, where you're going
so
really
fast.
Slowly
yes.
towards it, and then just as you're about to, it'll hop off.
Yeah.
And they go back to the same place every year to breed.
Ah,
isn't that interesting?
It really
is. They reckon they know the smell of the pond or whatever, or the smell of the algae in the pond, one or the other and stuff. And both the males and the females will go back to the same place and the place that they were born in. So that's kind of nice, I suppose.
But there has to be an exception to all of these rules, of course, because otherwise they'd never get, colonise anywhere new.
True.
There's obviously one every year that decides, no, I'm not going back. I'm going to have a look over here and see what I find.
Or maybe you go back and the pond has been drained and it's not a pond anymore. Maybe you have to go and find somewhere else.
Now, speaking of drained ponds, I always feel bad for the poor frogs. Not all of the frog spawn, obviously, because there's still a big population. But the pond at Crowan a few years ago, some rabbits, when we were at peak rabbit, I mean, every 8 or 10 years, the population of rabbits at Croagh just gets insane. You pull into the gate, guests love it when they come in for the cottages.
I've seen millions,
particularly at night. Millions,
never
millions.
Seen any worse.
We're at a very low population at the moment because Mixie comes along and kind of wipes
you've
most
shot
of them.
No,
no, no, no. no. Myxomatosis, unfortunately, strikes every now and again. It decimates the population, goes low, and then it grows back up again. But while we were at peak rabbit a few years ago, their burrows were obviously so extensive that they were running out of space that one enterprising rabbit decided to burrow into the side of the pond. And I'd imagine he got quite a surprise when the volume of water washed into his house.
Oh, yeah.
But now it means that the pond, it's been there for hundreds of years. It was obviously dug a long, long time ago. And it's fed from a spring. It never goes dry. But because of the hole in the side now, the water level goes up and down quite rapidly. So during rain, it fills up. And then if there's a dry period, it drops really quite quickly. And so many times I've seen the poor old frogs will lay their spawn just at the water's edge, which a week later is a foot above where the water is.
Mm. Sometimes they lay it in quite mad places. Yeah. I've seen them like across a lawn and various places, so maybe they don't always go back to where they were born. I don't know.
Yeah. But they're lovely little creatures.
I
love seeing them in the grass, and thankfully last year I found one just in front of the lawnmower as I was cutting the grass. I got him just in time. I wonder how many of the poor little creatures get caught by the lawnmower, but I was able to move him to safety after I took his photo.
Once they turn into froglets and leave the pond and stuff, they spend the rest of the year then away from water, in hedges and long grass and various places. But they'll eat slugs and insects, worms, spiders, all those sorts. So they're kind of a gardener's friend, really. Mm. Good thing to have. And they've got a special tongue that just flicks out, as you've seen in like cartoons and everything and stuff, that flicks out really quickly and will grab a little insect and that, which is always kind of fun to watch. And in the winter, they don't quite hibernate and stuff, but they go into kind of a torpor. Mm. So they just shut down when it's frosty and stuff, and they'll find somewhere that's frost free, so either like under a stack of turf actually, or under rocks or under a tree stump, somewhere like that, and they'll stay there then until they're ready, really, until now this time of the year and stuff. I suppose the mild weather probably confuses them a little bit and stuff, but they should come out of hibernation now, and then they just get straight into mating. So they breed then February, spawn in March, and the tadpoles hatch and they're kind of around April, May time. And it's fabulous to see them when they're in a little pond and stuff, when they're tadpoles and stuff shooting around the place. We've all seen, remember at school back in the day, back in the 80s, when like everybody brought in a jar of frog spawn. Which was
I think every nature table in the 70s would have had a little jar where you saw the spawn turn into tadpoles, and then you saw the little tiny legs start to form on the back of the tadpoles, just where the tail is, and the tail gets shorter. It's illegal to move the spawn now, though.
Yeah.
So you're not allowed to touch it.
It's protected by the Wildlife Act, so it's illegal to do anything that will actually harm a frog. Mm. Now, I'm not sure who actually
Polices that,
mm. but it is. And the female can lay about 2,000 eggs.
My God.
Which is an awful lot, isn't it? But of that, only a fraction would survive, between predated on by birds, and fish will eat some of the eggs. I don't know what the number is and stuff, but yeah.
Gorgeous little creatures. Absolutely
gorgeous little creatures.
Lovely.
Yeah, keep an eye out for them and stuff. Mm. And
I've just seen a note here that there's a meeting of Creating a Local Sustainable Future and Practical Actions for Your Community on Saturday 23rd. So if you're listening to the show live, that's tomorrow. If you're listening to the repeat, you missed it. It's in the Ormond Hotel between 9:45 and 3. It's a free workshop and all are welcome. So Creating a Local Sustainable Future and Practical Actions for Your Community in the Kilkenny Ormond Hotel between 9:45 and 3 on Saturday the 23rd. And I'm sure in that is protecting habitat, one of which would be a waterway.
Who's running that through?
I don't know. That's all the information that I was given there. And then there's also the 5K family run in Castle Park on Sunday, my birthday. Registration at 10 o'clock. And proceeds go towards Group 174 Carlow Kilkenny. So a run on Sunday, and then a workshop all day Saturday, Creating a Local Sustainable Future. I must look into that. That sounds very interesting.
It does.
So one of the things that we know about the frog is that it likes to spend its time in long grass. So if your garden is really, really tidy and you're trimming the grass all the way to the edge and you're keeping it low, you won't see any frogs. So what we were trying to encourage people to do last year when we were talking about jobs in the garden is to leave a little bit of the garden alone. And now is the time of the year that you want to plan that piece of lawn or grass or whatever that you're going to leave alone, because a lot of people are cutting the grass already. I know I've cut some grass already. Yep, I've cut some. Well, I the place has to look good for guests coming to the cottages, and the animals love to eat it. So up and down the lawn, up and down the drive, I've already cut and fed into the animals. But I have a spot that last year I left alone. I didn't cut until the end of March into April, and the amount of flowers, including orchids, that just popped up in that piece of lawn was incredible. It took
the early purple orchid.
Loads and loads and loads of photos. It was phenomenal. Violets, all sorts of stuff came up there. I'd never planted anything there. I'd never touched it, never did anything. It's the first year that I just left it alone and all those surfaced. So I'm going to do the same thing this year. So if you'd like to do your bit for the pollinators, and if you'd like a bit of colour in the garden, and if you'd like some less work, create what's called a managed for the environment piece of your grass.
I think we should all have access to one of those signs that you could put at
managed
your garden.
Managed for wildlife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be a good idea?
Because when people come then, they don't think, oh, well, you look at that scruffy bit of grass that she hasn't cut over there. They'll think, oh my God, she's doing her bit and managing that for the wildlife. Yeah. And I would love our council and local authorities and schools and factories and anybody that has large pieces of grassland to just leave it alone until into the summer.
And not to spray flowers or weeds.
Yeah, leave it alone. So I know there's some areas out in Thomastown that are managed for wildlife. But in the UK, a lot of the local authorities are now leaving the road verges, even in towns and cities. So instead of cutting the grass there, they're letting it grow and sticking up those little signs saying, we haven't forgotten, this is being managed for wildlife. And you will see an awful lot of colour there. You won't see it all the time, but you will see a lot of colour. So identify a spot like that for yourself. And then, of course, if it's freshly sown grass or it's a new lawn, it may take a while for those plants to establish themselves. So you can give them a hand by buying some wildflower mix, and it's available everywhere.
Everywhere.
From your garden centre to your DIY shop, online, you can buy your wildflower mix pretty much.
I feel anywhere. I actually really missed a business opportunity.
Yes, yes, yes. We could have been harvesting that and making it available. But it is well worth sowing some of that. And the labyrinth that I mow in the lawn out at Crowan, I've just kept going, so it's still there now. I don't need to relay it out anymore. I just need to run on the path with the lawnmower in the same direction. But the areas that I don't cut there over the last couple of years, I've been throwing in seed every now and again, and I'm dying this year to see what comes up. Because I grew some plants from seed and put them in when they were in flower and let them go to seed in there. So I'm really, really excited to see if any of the corn flowers have taken or anything more exotic. I'm excited about that. So first job, identify part of your garden that you're just going to leave to nature. You're not going to neglect it. You're going to manage it for the pollinators and so on. And then where you're going to grow some other things, be it flowers or veg, it's time to get the seed beds prepared. So while the ground is reasonably dry, so not immediately after a shower, but I was walking up on the beds in the walled garden today, and it's absolutely perfect to work now. Not too sticky, dry enough to walk on. So time to get those into cultivation. And if you wanted to get a head start when you start to plant out, you can cover some areas of the veg garden with some fleece or polythene or some cloches, and that will help the soil to warm up. And soil is fantastic at holding on to heat because, well, it's the earth, basically. So if you heat up a bit, it will make a degree or two of a difference, and that will bring things on so much faster. Now, some of the things that you really need to get onto, if you haven't done them already, winter flowering heathers, as the flowers disappear on those, and most of them are gone now, it's time to give those a serious trim to prevent them getting all leggy, because they get very woody and spread all over the place and kind of collapse onto themselves. And if you just leave that, eventually next year you might still get colour on it, but you'll have a great big bald bit in the middle. So your winter flowering heathers, go at those now and give them a trim. And then mulch some of your perennial veg. So there are things which stay in the veg garden year after year, for example globe artichokes, asparagus, even your rhubarb and so on. So it's time to give most of those a mulch now with some well-rotted compost. Asparagus especially will really appreciate it. So if you've not fresh dung, but well-rotted compost, which isn't going to get too hot, feed that onto the asparagus now and it will pay you back with plenty of spears. And likewise, the globe artichoke, a very hungry plant because they produce so much leaf material every year. A lot of energy goes into the producing of those production of those globes and seeds. And so if you don't give them a feed, they'll eventually collapse onto themselves.
When you say well-rotted manure and stuff, how long does it take to well-rot manure?
Okay, well, it depends on how hot it gets, right? So if you spread it out really, really thin, it can stay looking like manure forever. But if you create a heap of it, the heat that gets going in there helps with the breakdown. The process gets much, much faster. So if you make a heap this year, you'll use it next year.
Okay.
So every year, create a heap, but you're thinking a year in advance. And similarly with compost, the way to make compost is to aerate it. You keep turning it and so on, and then you'll be able to go from leaf material to compost you put on your plants in 6 months. But most people don't have the time to put or the effort, like to put the effort into turning the compost heap. So you can substitute that effort with time. So what I do is I create massive compost heaps with grass cuttings and veg matter and straw and dung and all of that kind of stuff, and I leave it for over a year and a half, or even 2 years. I need do nothing with it then. I don't turn it, nothing. And at the end of that 2 years, it's crumbly, it's perfect, it's easy to work with, and I spread it around the veg that way.
Okay.
So you can put in effort or you can put in time. They're the two. Now, maybe one more job, just the raspberry canes. I know you've pruned yours. I planted the plants you gave me. They're in place now. Thanks a million for that. But this is your last chance now, just before they start to sprout. If you've autumn fruiting raspberry canes, you need to cut them right down to the ground to stimulate new canes to fruit in the autumn, because it's on this year's growth that you'll get your autumn fruiting raspberries.
Mine have started growing, actually.
Perfect time of year. Now, we've run out of time in the kitchen garden again for another week, so thank you very much for listening to us, and we'll be back at the same time next week on Community Radio Kilkenny City. During the week, you can keep in touch with us on Twitter, at NesbittF, or at Mags Morrissey, and we'll be back at the same time next week.